This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, Divine Miss Z.
And welcome to the show. Today, we're going to talk about love, laughter, and loyalty, one family's journey with cancer. And this is a very personal show to me because it happens to be about my family. My special guest today is my aunt, Barbara A. Chernow, PhD. She's the founder of Chernow Editorial Services, Inc., which has coordinated production on more than 1,100 professional books in the fields of clinical medicine and business management for publishers in the U.S., U.K., and Germany. Barbara is also the managing editor of the biographical supplement to the International Encyclopedia of the Social Sciences and the Macmillan Encyclopedia of Architects, as well as lead editor of the Columbia Encyclopedia 5th edition. She was interviewed on over 70 radio and television stations nationwide for that. Back in 2007, she authored Beyond the Internet, Successful Research Strategies. She's also taught scientific and medical editing at NYU and business writing and communications at Parsons The New School. Now, Barbara also has a new blog on curetoday.com, which follows the life of her mother, which is my grandmother, with oral cancer. What you've done, Barbara, actually is quite amazing. You're my aunt, and I can say that, but you have amazing accomplishments. So I want to welcome you first to the show.
Thank you very much. You know, I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you. Well, this is a personal story, and maybe you can share a little bit from the personal end of you dealing with your mother, my grandmother, and share a little bit about the story with the cancer.
It's a subject that took me a long time to decide to write about. Dealing with this is very difficult because it is such a visible cancer. I was very young when it happened. It was a very different time. People treated cancer as something more than scary. It stigmatized you. You couldn't, if you had cancer, you weren't rehired for employment. An employer could refuse to hire you again. People shied away from you as if you had some sort of an awful contagious disease. People hid it. And children were not included in decision-making. There was no family therapy when this kind of a diagnosis occurred. So it was all terribly, terribly scary for a family that had never even heard of such a disease before.
Now, what time frame are we talking about the first time around?
She was diagnosed in 1963. I was 15 years old, and I just came home from an ordinary day at school to find both Grandma and Grandpa at home, which was unusual because he was such a hard worker. I'd never seen him home in the afternoon. Both of them home panicked, and when I asked what was wrong, they just said, that's a sinus problem Grandma had been complaining about, had turned serious, and she had to go to the hospital. And then they both just went and just left me. I really didn't know what to do.
So what happened when they came back?
Nobody told me anything. Grandpa came back. I don't think he knew either. He was, you know, they were wonderful people. They were loving. They were caring, but they weren't formally well-educated. There was no public education of cancer. There were no commercials on television, the way you see now hospitals soliciting business,
yeah,
if you will,
right,
to treat cancer patients. Grandpa came home. I'm not sure he was 100% sure what the diagnosis was. He just told me not to worry, they were taking care of her. But as the weeks went on and nothing happened, I kept saying, how is she, how is she, how is she? He really didn't provide a lot of information to me.
Was she in the hospital at this time?
She was in the hospital. She was in the hospital for several weeks before they even decided how to operate. She lost the upper jawbone and part of the palate. they managed to save her eye, which apparently had been a very big issue. The cancer was well advanced at that point. Their reconstructive surgery techniques were not what they are now. The devices that they used, the prosthetic devices they used, were made of much heavier and unwieldy materials, so they were hard to keep in place. All I knew was she called me every afternoon after school to ask me how things were, because she was still a mother first. And one day after she'd been in the hospital a couple of weeks, she said to me on the phone, "I think it's that awful thing."
Okay. And now, what was the actual diagnosis?
Maxillofacial cancer.
Okay. And this was not that common back then, or nobody really talked about it?
Nobody talked about it. I don't know how common it was back then. Curiously, President Grover Cleveland back in the 1880s had a very mild version of this. And he was taken offshore on a boat where doctors performed surgery, but it was a much less serious case, and he returned to office, and nobody was the wiser for many, many years.
Okay. Does anyone know what causes this specific type of cancer?
Generally speaking, people with this kind of cancer were heavy smokers. Grandma was not a heavy smoker, but if you look at pictures of her back in the late 30s, early 40s, you will sometimes see a cigarette in her hand. But smoking is the main cause of oral cancer.
Gotcha. Okay, so now she's in the hospital. She's calling on you every day. Eventually, I'm assuming she has some type of surgery and then comes home.
She has major surgery. And again, because children were treated differently back then, I wasn't allowed to see her. You had to be 16 or 18, I can't remember now, to go visit someone in the hospital.
Even if it's your parent?
Yes. But this was such a serious case that they finally decided they would let me go see her. Now, your grandfather, Grandpa, worked very, very long hours. The bills from this were enormous, so he was trying to put in a lot of time. He had a dispensation to go visit her late at night, when normally the hospital would not have allowed visitors. So here I was in the middle of the afternoon. They tell me I can go visit her, but there's nobody to go with me. And I got to the hospital, and this resident came out to see me, and he said, "She's going to look different. Try not to overreact," and just sent me in.
Kind of scary.
And it was scary.
Okay.
And the change was, I mean, she was a beautiful woman. The change was very visible. She was hysterical, crying. And I realized at that point that our roles would very much change.
So in essence, you became the parent to the parent.
Yes. And she was, you know, she was a very loving and a very overprotective woman, and she cared very much about her family, came first with her. She really was distraught at the fact that she was now, in her opinion, going to become a burden to me.
Okay. And did that feeling continue once she came home?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because they were both shocked at what had happened. Certain things in life, Lori, are your perspective on things. Doctors were quite different in those days. A person had cancer, you excised the tumor and left the person to cope with what was left. And what a doctor thinks is functional, or what a male doctor back in 1963 thought was looking okay, was not her definition of it. So when they said that things would be all right, their definition of all right was not hers.
Right, and their definition of all right meant she would survive. It didn't have any of the didn't discuss any of the fallout effects. Which
exactly.
Actually, I find that true today, because even when I've had surgery, they don't always tell you when you're at the doctor's what's going to happen when you get home, and some of the things that may happen to you, some of the symptoms may be normal, but they don't always prepare you. But now you're a teenager, because at this point I'm only maybe a couple of years old, so I don't remember any of this first time around stuff. But you're 15 years old now. You're taking care of your mom. So what happens from that point?
She had great. This is a subject that I know is very sensitive to people, but she always regretted having the surgery. She felt she shouldn't have done it. It was 33 years that she survived, and it was a constant torment to her. She had difficulty eating. She had difficulty breathing. She had difficulty sleeping, talking. She tried going back to work, but the prosthetic device would fall out, and when it fell out, she couldn't talk. She couldn't eat. She couldn't even tell a cab driver to take her to the hospital.
So it was embarrassing in a way.
It was terribly embarrassing. And some people were quite cruel. People who knew her before said things that weren't very nice, and so she started to shy away from old friends. And she didn't want the old friends back in her circle. She wanted a whole new circle of people. Maybe people who didn't know her before and wouldn't say anything. So they became even very isolationist.
Yeah, what's interesting is all the years growing up with her, from when I was a child into my teens and into my 20s, I didn't even know about this until probably my 20s, because I always thought she was a gorgeous woman the way she was. So I did not know that story until later on in life. But go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, but then ultimately, you know, she survived for another 33 years. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, Barbara. When we come back, I want to talk about the second half of that story.
Oh, yes.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment.
Do you suffer from back, neck, or body pain? Do you suffer from migraines or have jaw or face pain? Has conventional medicine failed you? Were you injured or in an accident? Call chiropractic physician Dr. Dan Maddock at 813-935-1664. Dr. Dan has helped thousands of patients gain relief for more than 30 years. Dr. Dan is caring, gentle, and takes his time with each patient. He's also a past president of the International Craniopathic Society, a special certification of only 300 chiropractors worldwide. Dr. Dan helps patients from the neck up and the neck down. Dr. Dan accepts most insurance plans. Don't continue to live in pain. Call 813-935-1664 today. That's 813-935-1664, and get on track to better health.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more. Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
Welcome back to My World, the world of Lori Zook. My special guest is my Aunt Barbara Chernow, and we've been talking about love, laughter, and loyalty, one family's journey with cancer, which is personal because Barbara Chernow is my aunt, and we're speaking about my grandmother who had oral cancer. So she had it once when you were a teenager, and then she survived for another 33 years. So I want you to kind of lead into what happened. How did she know it came back, and what happened from that point on?
What happened in 1995, I'm going to say, was a tumor was discovered by the dentist, the prosthodontist who took care of her mouth after the oral cancer. He suspected that the 33 years that she had survived with a prosthetic device that was made of such heavy materials had in part irritated the inside of her mouth so much that a different form of cancer, a much more devastating form, had developed, something called squamous or squamous cell cancer. And as you know, that is extremely difficult to watch and to deal with.
It is. I've actually memorized squamous cell carcinoma of the mucous membrane because I have to disclose that to every doctor I go to see when they ask about family, you know, history mm-hmm. of cancer. Now, I want to back up just a little bit. The prosthetic device that she had put in her mouth back in the 60s when everything was done so crudely, did that change over the years, that device? Did anything change to
yes.
make it more comfortable?
Okay. No. It didn't necessarily get more comfortable, but because the body changes and because the mouth changes, gums change, what was left of what she had, they do have to keep refitting the devices. But and the materials got a bit lighter.
Okay.
But it was still bulky. It was almost like a plate that you would have in your mouth plus a light bulb on top, a light bulb shaped piece on top that filled in the cheek where the bone had been removed.
So it's something that you would always feel?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And it didn't really seal off the upper part of the mouth completely, so food could get in, and eating was uncomfortable, and breathing and sleeping and that sort of thing.
Was the device removable for her if
yes.
she wanted to clean it? Okay.
Oh, you had to take it out several times a day to clean it.
Okay. Didn't realize all that, so pretty messy.
Very messy. And we never understood quite how this developed, this new version of it developed so quickly, because she was under the constant care of a doctor. But I have to admit, as I look back on it, that as the years went by and she got older, she had other issues. She had a broken hip. She had a broken shoulder. She had a lot of other issues, and she was starting to
get a weakened immune system?
Her bones were very weak. I think the immune system was weak, but I also think that she was just aging and disengaging from all of this. I think a lot of it just became too much for both Grandma and Grandpa, and they weren't dealing with it as directly as we might have had she not had the first bout of cancer. I think we might have seen that there was something going on had she not had all these other problems. But as you get older and you have a little ache here and a little pain there,
you can't judge which is worse.
You don't always pay as much attention as you should.
Right, right. All right, so now we're at the last part. So I remember she went, you know, was in the hospital, and eventually, mm-hmm. you know, it was terminal.
We actually suspected as soon as this was diagnosed that it was terminal. I, over the intervening years, as you know, I began a company. My company edits medical textbooks for medical students, for doctors and specialties. I paid special attention over the years to developments in this area because of Grandma. I knew a lot of the doctors who were treating her, and it was stage 4 when they caught it.
Late.
So it was very late in the game. Nonetheless, you want to be sure that you try everything you can. You want to make sure that whatever decision you make, you've weighed all the options. And so we did do a lot of testing on her to make sure it hadn't spread if she decided to have surgery again. We looked into different types of chemotherapy treatments, and she did undergo radiation. And at first it looked promising, but it crept back. And I can remember that she was so undecided about what to do, torn between wanting to be there for all of us and not wanting this nightmare she had been living with to continue. And one night at her dining room table, I was having coffee with her and talking, and I could see this black spot on her cheek, and I realized that she had waited so long to make any kind of a decision that the cancer was already breaking through.
Okay. How long from the second time the cancer was discovered until she passed away?
I think about 9 months.
So pretty short amount of time.
It was a very short amount of time.
Now, because of everything that happened to you, is this one of the reasons that kind of inspired you to be a medical book editor?
No, that happened separately.
Okay.
That happened separately. But once I got into it, of course, this subject was of interest to me, and over the years, there have been significant changes in reconstructive surgery, in the materials from which prosthetic devices are made, and also doctors are better now at educating the patient. There are more resources available, and there is family therapy now when this sort of thing is diagnosed. A child now wouldn't be left out the way I had been at the time.
Right, because I think the family part of it is important. You know, to not see your mother at 15, I can't imagine that. Even for a young child, I can't imagine not being able to get, you know, you want to see your mommy.
Well, also, she did, because you know she was extremely private, which is why you didn't know about it for so long. She wanted no one to know about it. So she really kept saying, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody what it really is. Cancer was considered an embarrassment. It was considered a stigma. So I was limited in what resources I even had for backup outside of the family.
Because there was nowhere to turn for help.
There was nowhere to turn to, yeah.
Gotcha.
And I can remember Grandpa would come home and tell me, oh, it's going to get better, it's going to get better. But then when I saw her, I realized that even if it got better, it was never going to be good.
And she, at that point, probably didn't want to stay alive under those circumstances.
No. I think at the time she believed the doctors that it would be okay, that she would function again, that in their opinion she would look okay. And she wanted very much to be there for her family. I was 15. That was still a fairly young age. You were a few years old. She had a grandchild. She wanted to see you grow up. So I think she very much wanted to believe it would all be okay. And when she found out it wasn't, she regretted that she had had the surgery.
Right. It's kind of, you're looking back in hindsight going, should I have, you know, chosen to stay alive or not?
She told me a story, Lori, about 3 years after the surgery. On a Saturday morning, I found her weeping at the dining room table. And I sat down with her, and she told me a story she'd never told me before, which was that before she had the surgery, a therapist had come in to see her from the hospital. And he kept saying to her, do you understand what they're going to do? Do you understand what the surgery entails?
Mm-hmm.
And she kept saying, yes, but I have a daughter I have to be there for. I have a granddaughter I want to be there for. And he kept saying, you might think about taking palliative care and then just letting go. And she refused that. That was a very unusual concept in those days, that you might just let go, not fight for it. But she looked at me that morning and she said, I'm sorry. She said, that's what I should have done.
Yeah, a lot of pain, I think. And so I want to talk a lot more. We're gonna cover this topic, you know, especially with the patient education part of it.
Right.
When we come back in just a moment, we'll go to a quick commercial break. Are you looking for an affordable way to advertise to thousands of consumers nationally? If you own a business and didn't think you could afford radio advertising, you need to call me, Lori Zook, host of the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. My show reaches thousands of people on 29 AM and FM stations nationwide, as well as through the internet. Additionally, your commercials will also be heard on all of my podcasts and throughout social media sites. Don't wait another minute. Call me at 813-777-4908. 813-777-4908, and let me bring your message to the nation and to help you gain more exposure.
Do you suffer from back, neck, or body pain? Do you suffer from migraines or have jaw or face pain? Has conventional medicine failed you? Were you injured or in an accident? Call chiropractic physician Dr. Dan Maddock at 813-935-1664. Dr. Dan has helped thousands of patients gain relief for more than 30 years. Dr. Dan is caring, gentle, and takes his time with each patient. He's also a past president of the International Craniopathic Society, a special certification of only 300 chiropractors worldwide. Dr. Dan helps patients from the neck up and the neck down. Dr. Dan accepts most insurance plans. Don't continue to live in pain. Call 813-935-1664. 1664 today. That's 813-935-1664, and get on track to better health.
And we're back. I'm Lori Zook, and my guest today is my Aunt Barbara Chernow. We've been talking about love, laughter, and loyalty, one family's journey with cancer, and the story is my family, my Aunt Barbara Chernow. So we've discussed my grandmother, your mother, and the squamous cell carcinoma of the mucous membrane from which she ultimately passed away the second time it had occurred. Let's go now to, let's talk about positive things as far as what should people know? Because back in, you know, the 60s, we were discussing, it was almost a shameful thing. You couldn't go out, you know, and it seems to me every time a new disease is discovered, that's the shameful thing. And it's sad, I think, the way it's perceived or the way even that it's presented. So knowing that, how can you make people more aware, and how can doctors maybe better educate their patients as to what happens in cases like this?
I think, Lori, that if medical science has proved anything, it is the danger of smoking. First thing people should be aware of is that lung cancer is not the only cancer that comes from smoking. And facial cancer, oral cancer, is almost always a product of smoking. So again, if you can, stop smoking. The dentist you see for a regular checkup should do a check of your mouth for oral cancer. The earlier it's caught, the better and easier it can be treated. And there are many cases that can be treated successfully now.
Now, let me ask you a question on that. Is oral cancer easy to spot? I don't know if you know enough, but go ahead.
In some cases, yes. It appears as a white, scaly appearance inside the mouth, or it can appear as a sore that doesn't heal. But a dentist generally can pick up the beginnings of it. And I've noticed in the last 10 years or so that dentists, my dentists certainly do an oral cancer check. They'll ask you to move your tongue around. They'll check under the tongue. And the other thing people should be aware of is pain in the bone, the cheekbones. Okay. And if you have recurring sinus problems, you should just have that checked to be sure that it is a sinus problem and not a sign of something else.
Okay. Now, why do you think oral cancer is not discussed, though, maybe as much as other cancers? Is it not as common?
I think it's more common than people know. I think it is so, in this case, in a case such as we had in our family, when it is so advanced, it is so unpleasant to look at that people shy away from it, and they really don't want to deal with it. If you look at ads on television, there have been efforts in the last few years to do some very powerful anti-smoking ads, and they've shown people on television who have suffered with oral cancer because of this, and they've shown all kinds of very explicit ads, and they run for a very short period of time and they get pulled. And I'm really starting to think that people react so negatively to them, they're almost too harsh to watch.
Well, okay, I I'm agreeing with you. I'm surprised because I really don't see anything, any commercials on TV discussing this topic.
Remember the ad where they show a man who's taking a shower and he has a piece of plastic over a hole in his throat? And they ran that one for a short period of time. There have been a few high-profile cases of it, most notably the film critic Roger Ebert, who died in the last few years, who went through something very similar to what our family experienced. He was quite open about it. They showed a story about him on television a couple of times, and then it stopped. No one wants to see it.
Yeah, I think that's sad. I think, I don't know what's happened, but it seems like people just turn away from things they should be facing up front. And, you know, before we started the show, I talked about people sticking their head in the sand and mm-hmm. not facing reality. They need the reality check. Otherwise, if you don't face it, it's not going to go away. You know, and I can give you an analogy to that. I remember many years ago, I read some story where it said, if there's something wrong with the car, and the car is making noises, some people will actually turn up the volume to the radio so that they don't hear the car is falling apart as they drive it. And I don't understand that mentality. I think in our family, it's the other way around. We want to look at it and say, what is wrong? Get me the diagnosis and tell me what my options are so I can determine a treatment plan. But I think you're right. A lot of people just turn away from it.
They turn away from it, and because it's not spoken about, because you don't see any recurring ads for it or discussion of it, people don't even think to look for it. I can remember people saying to me, oh my God, I never even heard of that. You can have cancer of the face? It's not much thought about.
Well,
And let's remember, too, that in the case of our family, in both cases when she had it, it was a very advanced stage.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about doing due diligence and doctor selection and skill and compassion. And maybe you can go through that, you know, using the examples of grandma's doctors way back when, maybe compared to, you know, the second time in the 90s. And then how should it be today?
It's much better today. I think doctors are better educated about dealing with the patient. They give out much more accurate information. They can do simulations on the computer of what the effects of the surgery will be and what can be done reconstructively. There are new techniques for facial flaps that improve the outcome. The prosthetic device material is lighter. And I think in the diagnosis stage, they are much better at bringing in a team of doctors. So you don't just see your ENT doctor or your oncologist. You get to meet with therapists, you meet with chemotherapy experts, radiation experts. You have an opportunity to get all the information that you need. There are lots of support groups out there now. And certainly if this were to happen nowadays, I wouldn't have been left alone to go in and just see her like that.
Right. So how should somebody, if we have a listener that maybe has a family member in that same kind of scenario, how do you know, how do you vet out the doctors themselves? How do you know that you're making a good choice? Where do you look?
I look first for a doctor at a major research hospital where the doctor has seen a lot of this kind of problem and has had a lot of experience with it. In many states, such as New York certainly, you can check online for a doctor's reputation, for malpractice suits, to see whether there are any reasons you should be uncomfortable with a doctor. You can check their background. You can check reviews by other patients. You can check what they've published, what their record is. I think all of that gives you some sense of the doctor, but when you should also be comfortable. So if you go in and the doctor is too brusque or too insensitive or impatient in answering questions, I would be cautious, because this kind of an illness requires a lot of follow-up, a lot of post-surgical support. And you want to know that it's going to be there. And if he doesn't call you back or she doesn't call you back, and isn't willing to discuss all of this with the family, it's not a good sign.
Right. I would agree. One of the things I do, and I'm guessing probably you do and other family members we have do as well, is I make a list of all the questions that I mm-hmm. want to ask the doctor. That way, when I leave, I'm not worried about, oh, I forgot to ask this one question. I have my list with me, and I'll take notes on whatever it is. In the case of, you know, of cancer, I would obviously think you would have some family member or members with you for support. Mm-hmm. But looking for that doctor that's going to not just look at you like another number. You want to feel like the doctor actually cares. I'm sure that in some sense they have to detach, otherwise it would be too emotional. But what you're trying to say is they should have a good attitude about, you know, maybe being positive and saying, here are the different things we can do, rather than just, you know, make you feel like, oh my gosh, this is the end.
Exactly. I'm not looking for them to react emotionally. That would not be constructive. And I think it's very difficult to spend your life reconstructing people's faces and be emotional about it. You have to have some detachment. But I also think a doctor needs to be honest. And if the outcome of this surgery is not going to be positive, or if there are going to be recurring problems, I think that has to also be said to you. And that's perhaps, in our case, what wasn't told to us, was how serious the consequences would be.
Okay. Well, one of the things I think that's different nowadays that you mentioned earlier is nowadays they can do plastic surgery, correct, on a lot of these cases. I don't know. I'm assuming insurance covers that to bring you back to what would be considered normal for you. And at least if they can do some type of plastic surgery, even if it's down the road, there's still hope because it's your face.
They could do some plastic surgery back then. However, with cancer patients, they're very cautious about how they do this. And there are techniques for dealing with facial flaps, but it is still a challenge to reconstruct bone. You can't rebuild bone.
Okay.
So when bone is taken out, there has to be some kind of an artificial device put in place.
All right. Well, who should accompany or represent the patient and the family?
This is an important point. I think that a family needs to get together and make a decision on how they're going to deal with the problems going forward. One person perhaps should be the family's representative and should accompany the patient. And everybody has to come to some understanding about how this will be dealt with. I think you'll remember it's a very difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
People have different feelings about what the right treatment options are. I think you have to respect everybody's feelings. You have to recognize that someday some family members will be stronger than others. Everybody has weak moments. The doctors don't always agree on the diagnosis. One doctor may be more positive, one doctor may be more negative or more honest with you. So I think the family does need to sit down, discuss the options, respect each other's moments, high moments, low moments, knowledge people bring to the table, pick somebody to represent the family in dealing with the doctor.
Okay.
This is something we did not do particularly well, but I think that's what we probably should have done.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, so stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more. Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
Are you looking for an affordable way to advertise to thousands of consumers nationally? If you own a business and didn't think you could afford radio advertising, you need to call me, Lori Zook, host of the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. My show reaches thousands of people on 29 AM and FM stations nationwide, as well as through the internet. Additionally, your commercials will also be heard on all of my podcasts and throughout social media sites. Don't wait another minute. Call me at 813-777-4908, 813-777-4908, and let me bring your message to the nation and to help you gain more exposure. And welcome back. My guest today is my aunt, Barbara Chernow. And we're talking love, laughter, and loyalty, one family's journey with cancer. It's my family. And so, Barbara, I want to go into some of the other aspects of this, which would be document preparation, like a do not resuscitate order, mm-hmm. you know, living will, end of life papers, and so forth. So maybe, you know, using grandma, you can discuss a little bit about that.
It's important that everybody put in place documents that express their medical preferences. And you should do this when you're healthy and can think rationally and you're not under the gun. In our case, this was not done. And when it was decided that grandma was terminally ill, she had a feeding tube, And we could not have it removed. Once you put it in, it's in. And it prolonged her life well beyond
what it should have been.
What it should have been. And certainly this is something you can speak to.
Right.
I think it's important that you express your preferences. Now, later on, we had an uncle who was in the hospital, and they wanted to do a feeding tube. And I remember then saying I would agree to it, but only if the ethics committee of the hospital agreed that if it didn't work after a certain period of time, it would be removed.
Okay.
And they refused me on that.
Well, I think the hospital refuses you, and I don't understand why. I don't understand if it's because that's how they're making money and it's insurance for them or not. And, you know, I do have a do not resuscitate because mm-hmm. all these things that happened change it. I do have a will. You know, I have the medical proxy because
right.
I don't want to end up in that same boat, so to speak.
No, none of us do. In our family, we've learned a very harsh lesson.
Right, but I don't think a lot of people in general even have wills, and that scares me. Because
no,
they don't understand. Yeah, they don't understand what's going to happen. It's going to go to probate. It could take months or years. People could contest it, you know, mm-hmm. by the time anything's done. But with the do not resuscitate order, that is, I mean, you can go online and Google that.
Right.
And come up with the do not resuscitate order. But with that, here's my question is, if you have a do not resuscitate order, what happens if the hospital doesn't want to honor it? Because you do hear stories about the hospitals putting up a fight.
You're supposed to. Okay, there are two things. First of all, it's not just a do not resuscitate. It's also feeding tubes.
Right. Different situations.
A whole bunch of situations. Your primary care doctor should have a copy of your medical proxy, of your medical power of attorney, your living will, all relevant documents. Your surgeon, in this case, should have it. The hospital should have it. And if all of that is on file, they have to honor it.
Okay.
Most of the time when it's not honored, it's because they don't know it exists. And if the hospital doesn't know it exists, they're going to save the life by whatever means possible.
I gotcha. All
and
right.
once they put you on life support equipment, getting somebody off it is very difficult. Because
right.
then you're asking the hospital to kill someone.
Yeah, it brings me back probably like 40 years to the Karen Ann Quinlan case back in New Jersey, mm-hmm. which was that story exactly.
Exactly.
So sad story. So, yeah, get your paperwork in order. If you're listening to the show, you don't know when something like this can happen to you or to one of your family members.
No, and do it when you're younger and healthy and it's not such an emotional decision.
Right, right.
It shouldn't be done under the gun.
Let's talk about some of the positive lessons here, because this was a hard one for me because I'll get upset just thinking about it. But when my grandmother passed, it was devastating to me because we were close.
Mm-hmm.
And the grieving part was very difficult because I had a lot of memories that were bad at the end. Now that time has passed, I try to think mostly of the happier part of my life
right.
with her, even if she wasn't in such good shape. That part was happy.
My lesson from her is to laugh and to smile and to enjoy every day. Because despite her problems, she did her best to bring pleasure to everyone around her. She cooked for everyone. She shopped for everyone.
Yep.
She did things that were really very funny. She had a great sense of humor. I brought friends home. She fed them. She entertained them. She was charming with them. And she never let her problem, well, she tried not to let her problem dominate her life, or at least not publicly. And that desire to be part of our lives, to be out there, to not ruin things for us, led her to rise above it. The
Wow.
very first time she went out after this surgery, she went out publicly, was for a high school play that I was in. Because all the other mothers were going, and I wanted her to come so badly, and she didn't want to disappoint me.
So that was a brave thing. And I'll share with you, you know, I'm sure you've heard the saying, what would Jesus do? Mine is, what would Grandma do?
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about something, I go, what would grandma do or what would grandma say about how I behaved in a certain situation?
Right.
And to this day, that's still kind of with me there. And I still think of it that way, is what would grandma do? What would she say? And I hear her voice coming back to me telling me the answer.
The fact that you weren't aware of it for so long is a very good indication of how well she covered.
Yeah, she covered really well because I had no idea. Yeah. I thought she was gorgeous the way she was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, down the road the second time, obviously, I knew I was in my 30s at that point.
Right.
You know, and then after I knew, I noticed some differences. But I never looked at her and went, oh, she looks terrible. There's something really wrong. I never saw that.
Right. And she kept you away from pictures of her before the surgery, so you really had no comparison.
Right, no clue, exactly.
You had no comparison.
Yeah, so I think you have to allow yourself time to grieve. There are support groups for that. I'm sure probably the hospitals have support mm-hmm. groups for that as well, right?
The hospitals have support group. Religious organizations have support groups. There are loads of ways now that you can connect with other people. That wasn't grandma's style. But for a lot of people, that probably is a really good way to go. You know, the other thing, when I think about her, when I think about why after 20 years I started to write about this, to be really honest, at this stage in my life, and I'll say, I mean, I'm going to be 68 next week, I was looking back one cold winter evening, sitting here comfortably in a chair, reading a book, having a cup of coffee. And I had a series of calls from friends who were depressed about the weather. It was snowy. It was cold. They were depressed about something at work. Everything just seemed negative. And I thought, my goodness, you have no idea what it is to really have a serious problem.
You know, and you're exactly right. And so sometimes, you know, you'll see somebody in a wheelchair or an amputated veteran, or I know a paraplegic, and I go, you know, I really have no problems. I can sit and, you know, bitch and moan and complain about my problems. But when I look at real problems, my problems are nothing. They're minuscule to what other people have and have to live with on a daily basis.
Right, right. What she did was remarkable. And I looked at it that night and I thought, why is everybody complaining about nothing, comparatively nothing? If you're basically healthy, you have a job, you have a nice place to live, you have good family around you, you have to relish it and enjoy it and pick yourself up and go out and do things. And you can't sweat the small stuff. You can't have regrets. That's a waste of energy.
Right.
Anger is largely a waste of energy. You need to keep a positive attitude, keep the negative vibrations out, and then when a real problem does come along, you can deal with it. But most of the things people get upset about are not real problems. And when I look at how Grandma smiled and laughed and coped, and you know, your grandfather owned a store, and she would go into the store and be very friendly with customers.
Yeah, she was always smiling there because you had a lot of regulars come into the store. So for her, that was one of her happy things. You have to have your happy things, right?
Absolutely. You have to have things that you're passionate about, that you enjoy so much that they help you rise above daily problems. I mean, everybody has a bad day, a bad moment. Everybody has a toothache, an ache, a pain, a broken bone. But you have to put things in perspective.
Right. And I want to bring up one last point, something
sure.
you mentioned earlier. For oral cancer, the oral exams. Now, I have had it done, but I've also gone to dentists that have not done it. And so that to me is something I'm thinking, if you're listening to the show, you want to ask your dentist
yes.
about doing some type of an oral exam where they're checking your mouth, your throat, the, you know, underneath your tongue, up above your gums.
Right.
Because I know when I've had years ago, I had an infection in my mouth, and there was a little bump up under my gum. So now if I think I have a problem, I actually run my finger up along my gums to make sure there's no infection.
Absolutely. And a good dentist should be doing that now as part of a routine exam. I didn't see this years ago, but as I say, in the last 10 years or so, I've noticed that at least my dentists do that routinely. So once a year, twice a year, when you have your teeth cleaned, that should be part of the exam.
Okay.
And
well,
You know, and it's with anything else, Lori, the minute you feel you have a problem, if it doesn't go away in a couple of weeks, you should go have it checked. Just better to be safe than sorry.
Right. Don't ignore it. So the last thing I want to ask you is talk about your new blog on Cure Today, curetoday.com.
CureToday.com is a wonderful resource for cancer patients and families. It provides a lot of basic information, educational resources, and stories from cancer survivors and caregivers. I wrote an article about my experiences about grandma called The Other Side of Grief, which is about getting through the grief and accepting the fact that these things do come back to haunt you every once in a while, and you shouldn't get upset with yourself about it. The people at Cure Magazine saw the article and asked me to write a blog, pull some of the themes out of the article, and write a series of blogs for them, and that's what I have been doing.
Right. Excellent. Excellent idea. I want to thank you very much for joining me today. You know, it is emotional for me. I'm glad I was able to hold it together on my end, you know. But do you want to give out any contact information?
If anybody has any comments or questions, they can reach me at bchernow@chernow.com. That's bchernow@chernow.com. I'd be happy to have any feedback from your listeners.
All
and
right.
I want to thank you, too, not just for today, but you were a tower of strength through this.
Thanks, Barb. Thank you. And I love you, and thank you very much for joining me today. And for our listeners, we'll be back next week, same time. Have a good one.
Do you suffer from back, neck, or body pain? Do you suffer from migraines or have jaw or face pain? Has conventional medicine failed you? Were you injured or in an accident? Call chiropractic physician Dr. Dan Maddock at 813-935-1664. Dr. Dan has helped thousands of patients gain relief for more than 30 years. Dr. Dan is caring, gentle, and takes his time with each patient. He's also a past president of the International Craniopathic Society, a special certification of only 300 chiropractors worldwide. Dr. Dan helps patients from the neck up and the neck down. Dr. Dan accepts most insurance plans. Don't continue to live in pain. Call 813-935-1664. Today. That's 813-935-1664, and get on track to better health.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry, providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more. Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.